Good evening, everyone. This meeting is called to order at 6:07. And live captioning is available this evening. To access this, click the live transcript button on your Zoom toolbar and select subtitle to see captions. You can also select view full transcript to open the full transcript in the sidebar. Staff and commissioners are participating both remotely and in person. Members of the public are welcome to provide public comment and listen to the meeting in person or on Zoom. Roll call. I will now call the roll. Commissioners, please say here after I call your name. Commissioner Halstead?
Here.
Commissioner Jan?
Here.
Commissioner Pepper?
Here.
Chair Mansfield, Commissioner White and Commissioner Emersfield are excused for tonight. Next is approval of the minutes. There is one set of minutes to be approved in this meeting for April 4th. Is there any motion to approve the April 4th minutes?
Motion to approve April 4th, 2023 minutes.
Second.
Okay. Yeah. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All who are not in favor, say nay. Oral and written communications. At this time, we'll take an oral communication. Staff will call the names of people in the order they are signed up, either online or in person. Members of public may speak for up to 3 minutes each. There is a limit of 3 people speaking on the same topic. This first oral communication period will end after 30 minutes. After everyone who has signed up to speak has been called, staff will ask if there is anything else who would like to speak. Staff, can you please call speakers for oral communication?
Yes, we have one sign up. Mr. Zimmerman, if you want to come forward. And Sada, can you prepare the timer? Thank you.
Yep.
Zihail, my dirty crook. Damn Nazi pig and fascist from Animal Farm. My name is Alex Zimmerman and I'm candidate for ship to the moon 23. Guys, I speak with you a few times before and I spoke with two manager Hoher a couple times. And they told me, no, you cannot decide. I don't know why. I think you are slave or zombie. Possible. Is exactly, maybe. So two manager told me go to next step. So I go to director. Months, twice spoke with him, no answer. About complaint, what is supposed to be, people make this, and you supposed to be answer this complaint. Because by definition, you say mafia, same bandita, same Nazi pig, what is consul how? You cannot make decision. What is you doing here? Come to your personal interest, little bit more money in your job. Yeah, so I spoke with director, nothing, and 2 weeks ago I spoke with manager. It's this asshole, I spoke, pardon for my word, speak for the last 15 years, and a couple times I saw him before. He's a pure, pure freaking idiot. He's no idiot. Another Nazi pig. So question right now, very simple. Last meeting, 12 people make a complaint, for my understanding. 10 or 12, not matter. You don't give answer, no, for one complaint. Guys, you understand what is you doing? You, by definition, a bunch of, not idiot, you a zombie, a slave, a sick people. Who are you? You commission. I spoke in commission in Seattle for last 20 years, 100 times. They supposed to be make decision. You have a power, but you not. You like a slave. Look what is these people, your bosses, give you permission, something doing. Guys, are you freaking degenerate idiot? You don't understand about what you're talking? You have a power. You don't need government intervention in your idiotic brain. You understand me, freaking cretina? You commissioner, people elect you. Oh, pardon. It's a council change, choice. Oh, so you by definition slave. So you are boring like a slave. Maybe born premature. I'm not too much sure about this. We need to make decision. Well, we are a big city, and we have too many problems right now. And I complain about discrimination, but only about white discrimination. I mean, I'm thinking white people in Bellevue have right now Holocaust and genocide. It's in my opinion, and I speak about this in council chamber 2 times before, and I will speak every day about this. This is a big problem. Guys, stop and acting like a degenerate idiot. You have a power for doing this. Why are you so quiet? Ask me. Answer me. Who from you support
you so
make a complaint? Freaking cretin. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. And Chair, we have no more speakers this time. Thank you.
I apologize. Do we have a minute taker? Okay.
Online. Okay.
No. Perfect. Thank you. Appreciate that. I was taking notes just in case.
Communication from city council boards and commissions. Deputy Mayor Newman was unable to attend tonight's meeting. Major Tarrant, do you have anything to share?
Just quickly, just wanted to let you know that on May 23rd, a Tuesday between 6 and 8 p.m., the police department is joining with the King County Prosecutor's Office and Eastside for all. We just have an informational meeting about hate crime and bias-related incidents for the community.
Sorry, Major. Do you mind repeating that on the mic? Sorry about that.
Yes. I just want to let the commission know that on Tuesday, May 23rd, between 6 and 8 p.m., the Bellevue Police Department, along with the King County Prosecutor's Office and Eastside for All, is hosting an informational meeting on hate crimes and bias-related incidents for the community.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question, Chair? Would you mind sending me that information? Do you have an electronic format?
I can get it for you, probably.
Because we can distribute it to our providers that we contract with, and I can also see about having it shared in our community centers to post up for the public if you would like us to do that.
We would love that.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you.
So, information for the commission. Old business?
I have, so from a staff report, I do have something to share with you. Okay. Sorry about that. So last night, Chair Mansfield accompanied me in going to council to present your recommendations for the ARPA funding for the critical services that you spent a lot of time on, very thoughtful time. If you have a moment, I'd encourage you to go listen to our portion. It's not the whole evening. But the council had so much gratitude for your work, so I'd love for you to be able to hear that. They did unanimously pass those recommendations. They also raised some questions that I'm going to, on a topic that I'm going to share with you later. So we're going to talk tonight about a strategic planning process that we're going to undertake, and they provided some input on that as well. So it might be something for you to check out. Their insight is always very helpful. They raised some significant questions that we'll have to assess how and when we could address those questions both. The goal right now is to wrap up this process before our next funding so that it can provide some guidance, and I'll talk about that a little more this evening. Thanks so much.
Thank you. New business item one, comprehensive plan period update. The commission will receive presentation from Tara Johnson, comprehensive planning manager, about the city of Bellevue's comprehensive plan, which provides a roadmap for the growth in city. Tonight, the commission will review and provide comments on policy scope of the human services element.
Good evening, Vice Chair, members of the Human Services Commission. I'm Tara Johnson. Thank you for having me this evening. The Comprehensive Planning Manager with our Community Development Department. And I also wanted to introduce James Chow. He's a senior planner in the planning division. He works primarily on affordable housing, and he's also going to be supporting this work, supporting the update of both the housing element and the human services element. So you'll see a combination of him and me or and other staff. So just wanted to mention, and he's fairly new with the city. So he's been here just a few months, just under 6 months at this point. So with that, just wanted to, I'm here this evening to provide the commission with an update. I think we were long overdue. We've been long overdue with an update. So we launched this process, the comprehensive plan periodic update last February. We came to the Human Services Commission, and I understand there's several new commission members and also new staff. So I'm going to repeat some of the information we provided to you at that last meeting, just in terms of context and background. And yeah, happy to answer any questions. I can wait till the end, or feel free to stop me during the presentation. I'm pretty, you know, we can keep this pretty informal and conversational. So as I said, we were intending to come back to you, I think last fall, and then it got postponed. And so here we are a year later. So if you could go to the next slide. Thank you. So the purpose of the topic discussion this evening, we're really going to be providing you with I'm going to provide a lot of background on what the purpose of the comprehensive plan is, why we're updating the plan. So a lot of this that we covered at your last briefing in last year. But then we also want to, you know, really focus in on some of the community engagement work, and then also really get confirmation from the commission on the scope of policy changes for the human services element. So that, if you could go to the next slide. The agenda for this evening, as I said, just cover a little bit of background on what the purpose of the comprehensive plan is, what it does for us, why we're updating the plan at this point, talk about the technical requirements. So there's an environmental impact statement process that's, I'll go into the purpose of that, and it's required under state law and the State Environmental Policy Act. So we'll talk a little bit about that, and then start talking about the scope of policy changes for the human services element, and then how we really engage with you to the remainder of the process. Actually, if you could advance one more, I kind of just keep going. Yeah. So we kind of talked through the different phases. So we've broken the two-year long process into several phases. Phase one, which was when we launched the update, we also provided you with a briefing soon after the launch. We started a lot of work with the community at that point, really focused on the vision. So we had a vision survey, got feedback from the community, got confirmation from the community on some of the big themes and topic areas relating to the update and what the community really wants to see for the future of Bellevue. Following that, the summer of last year, we did a fair amount of community engagement. We went back to, and that was really informed by the feedback that we heard from the survey. We developed a number of concepts of how we, and we'll go into more detail about that, but really that was informed by the discussions we had with the community. We presented that to both the Planning Commission, really takes the lead on the policy recommendations. And then we also work with all of you, all the other boards and commissions, to really use your expertise in different areas to really inform policy development. So all of that feedback was taken, and we developed these growth concepts. Then we moved forward with the environmental impact statement process, which we're midway on. We also conducted a number of community workshops on various on various topics last summer, focused on placemaking, transportation, the environment, sustainability, and then housing. So housing is, of course, a big focus of the update, as is equity. And following that, of course, we developed specific what we're calling alternatives, and I'll talk about in more detail what those specific alternatives are that we're looking at. In addition, the EIS also covers two other initiatives. It covers the BellRed Look Forward, so the BellRed Plan, which was adopted many years ago, and we're looking at, was the vision for BellRed accomplished after, you know, looking back over a 10-year, 12-year period. And then, of course, which you may have heard about, the Wilburton Vision Implementation Plan. So that's the Wilburton Commercial Area. The EIS also covers all those various planning initiatives, as well as the periodic update. So a lot of work and coordination and collaboration with the various teams. And then following that, the intent is we'll have Wilburton policy changes adopted by the end of the year. We're intending to have the periodic update policy changes adopted by City Council in May of 2024. So exactly a year from now, a little over a year from now, we'll have the new comprehensive plan adopted. Right. So a little bit of context. Comprehensive plan is, of course, our visionary document. It sets the vision for the city, and it's the community's perspectives on how they want the city to grow over the next 20 years. So this current update is going to cover a period of 2024 all the way out to 2044. It also includes an overall vision, and then we actually have two separate volumes. We have volume one, which includes chapters or planner speak elements, of which the human services element is one of the chapters. And then, of course, it provides policy guidance for city staff, boards and commissions, as well as our electeds, our city council, to really provide direction and the framework for making decisions. It also sets in stage guidance for capital investments, so the capital, what we call our CIP plan, which is a six-year plan. Okay, go to the next slide. So covered this in a little bit of detail already. Our current plan has, of course, the vision. It also has a narrative for each of the various chapters or elements. Each element has goals and supporting policies. And then a very important piece is, of course, a lot of which we're going to be talking about as part of our EIS process, includes an overall map of land uses for the city. So land use designations that identify what uses, so residential, commercial, mixed use, industrial. So it really sets the stage for how development happens and provides guidance to both the land use code and zoning regulations. So this is just a list of all the various elements or chapters within Volume 1 of the Comprehensive Plan. Volume 2 actually includes sub-area plans, so plans for individual neighborhoods and sub-areas within the city. If you could go to the next slide. So we talked a little bit about this. The comprehensive plan really sets the stage. It's the community's vision and council's vision for the city over a long-term period. It leads to development regulations, so the land use code. It also results in things like the human services needs assessment, maybe potentially even the strategic plan that you're going to be talking about later, and then really sets the stage for what gets built where in the city, capital investments as well. So different types of plans. Next slide. So a little bit on some of the reasons why we update the plan now. So previous updates, we under the Growth Management Act or state law, we were previously required to update the plan every 8 years. Now there's been new state legislation that got passed that requires an update only every 10 years, and really the purpose is to sync it up with the census. So we're aligning, makes sense with, we're getting a lot of the data from the census updates as part of the plan. In addition, the Puget Sound Regional Council, which covers a four-county area, so covers King County, Pierce, Kitsap, and King County, Pierce, Kitsap, and Snohomish. Yes, covers the four-county area, and so really comes up with how we're going to grow regionally within that four-county area. They also certify a portion of all our comprehensive plans. And a big component of that is they administer transportation funding. So a big piece of updating a comprehensive plan does have some fiscal implications because we get transportation funding as a result of that. And then Vision 2050, which was passed in 2020, has a number of planning policies that provide guidance, and then each county is required to plan for a certain amount of allocated growth within that 20-year period. And then the county provides direction to individual cities. And I'll talk a little bit more about growth targets as part of this update, this briefing as well. In addition, City Council has an updated vision, which happens every few years. So we want to ensure that this periodic update and this updated comprehensive plan really reflects their vision, their focus on affordable housing, economic development, and then, of course, climate resilience and sustainability. Can you go to the next slide? So I talked a little bit about growth targets. So Vision 2050, what we call the regional growth strategy, provides direction on, they really do a good job of analyzing trends, so figuring out how much the entire region is going to grow over the next 20 years. And then every county has to kind of decide or determine how much growth they're going to take on. And then that gets allocated between different cities. So we go through a multi-year process trying to figure that out, how much growth each jurisdiction or city is going to take on. So we worked very closely with King County as well as a number of other jurisdictions through a regional process. We have elected, our council member Robertson was very active with that process. So it's the Growth Management Planning Council that takes the lead on that process. And, she was very instrumental in making sure that, Bellevue's interests were recognized as part of that overall process. Go to the next slide. So a little bit on community engagement, and a fair amount of this presentation is going to talk about some of the engagement that's been ongoing as well. If you could just advance. So as I said, during the first phase, we utilized a vision survey. In addition, we had a number of stakeholder discussions. We also have what we're calling a strategy team, which is a group of about 41 different stakeholders with different interests from the development community, the nonprofit community, community members. And so really, I think we were talking about Eastside for All. They're also represented as part of the strategy team. So really wide spectrum of stakeholders that provide guidance and feedback on policy development. Of course, we engage with various boards and commissions, get direction from City Council, and really incorporate that into our overall draft plan. If you could advance one more. Officially, the Planning Commission, which provides policy recommendations on both on all legislative matters, so that includes a comprehensive plan as well as the land use code, they take the primary role, but they really do take feedback from, so the human services element comes under the purview of your commission. Similarly, the Transportation Commission has purview over the transportation element and so on. The utilities element comes under the purview of the what is it? What's the name of that commission? I always forget that. The Environment and Utilities Commission. So I think. and then eventually the Planning Commission holds hearings, and then eventually City Council will adopt the draft, will adopt the plan, and then that will become our updated comprehensive plan. Right. So wanted to highlight a couple things. So we came to you last year, the beginning of last year, just to talk about what our overall scope was for the periodic update. And then purpose of tonight's conversation is really to get confirmation from all of you about the topic areas that we're going to be covering as part of the changes to the human services element specifically. So a little bit on the what the purpose of the EIS is. under the State Environmental Policy Act and state law, as a requirement that you have to assess environmental impacts. And given the amount of growth that we're really looking at, we'll talk a little bit about some of those growth issues as part of this presentation as well. But essentially, we're needing to plan for, as part of the adopted growth targets, a minimum of 35,000 housing units and then 70,000 jobs. So that's our established adopted growth target under the countywide planning policies. Given that is a there's a substantive amount of growth, we determined, and the SEPA official, which falls under development services, determined that we should be doing an EIS and really analyzing the environmental impact. So the EIS analyzes the environmental impacts of all the growth, and we look at various alternatives or scenarios for how that growth could happen. And then also the EIS also ends up including mitigation measures. So how are we going to ensure that those environmental impacts are minimized through our overall planning process? Under the EIS, we're analyzing four different alternatives. The no action or alternative zero represents what would happen if we were to make no changes to policies or land use, no zoning changes or upzones within the city. And then we have three different scenarios, alternatives one through three, that look at various components. So look at adding capacity in different parts of the city. Or at this point, we're just analyzing what that would look like. We haven't determined what the alternative is going to be. And then as part of the EIS, so we've hired consultants to assist us with that work. In addition, we're also doing some additional analysis. We're doing an analysis of racially disparate impacts. So we're evaluating all our existing policies in the comprehensive plan to determine which policies have led to areas of inequity or discrimination. We're also assessing displacement impacts. So along with the new growth that we're planning for, we anticipate disadvantage with that growth is displacement. So what the displacement issues are and how do we address them to ensure that they're minimized. We're also looking at an economic analysis that's focused on our neighborhood centers, which are smaller commercial areas within the city. So we're looking at what the viability of, what's needed to really develop and sustain those neighborhood centers.
Absolutely.
Just a clarifying question. I'm not sure I'm understanding in the growth alternatives, maybe, and I don't want to have to go down a rabbit hole, but just like it, at a high level, is there overlap?
Yes, and I'm going to talk
about that. Okay, sure. Okay, good.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Can I ask a question also? Yes. So the projections of 35,000 housing units and 70,000 jobs, when we've adopted targets like that in the past, have they been on point?
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's a five-year mid-cycle check-in now where we'll be evaluating what's been our progress to date. Not every jurisdiction, just from my experience and working in other places, not every jurisdiction is able to meet. So in some instances, they find that jurisdictions will find, oh, we're not able to meet our job target because there's just not been enough emphasis on economic development.
Right.
But we have not seen that happen here yet. But
thank you.
It's hard to predict.
Of course. Yeah. Thank you. All right. Could you go to the next slide?
All right. So as I said, we set adopted targets for 35,000 housing units and 70,000 jobs. That means that we have to plan for at least that much. A lot of cities will have capacity for more than those adopted targets. So if that provides more flexibility, if there's market demand and jurisdictions end up seeing more development than the adopted targets. We currently, within the city, if we were to make no changes, we currently have capacity for about 41,000 housing units and 124,000 jobs. So right now, our capacity can really address our minimum or our adopted targets.
So quick question. Are you saying that there's 35,000 you're planning for 35,000 additional in addition to the 41,000?
No. So our adopted targets mean that over the next 20 years, so 2024 to 2044, we have to plan for 35,000 housing units and 70,000 jobs. But based on our zoning right now, we have capacity for 41,000 more housing units in the city. I believe we're at 65, we have about 65,000 housing units right now. So that would be, but we have capacity for another 41,000 housing units based on current zoning. And then 124,000.
So there was a zoning news that they changed, King County is changing the zoning that we can divide the housing units. Is there anything related to recently?
I'm not quite following. Are you talking about something specific King County did with zoning, or are you talking about the...
They're changing the zoning so that we can, residential houses can be changed into the multifamily houses, I think.
Oh, yes. So that's under the, that's a bill that just got passed under the state legislature requiring, that we add more missing middle types of housing within the city. So it's not quite, in a way, it really does tie into zoning. It's allowing, expanding the types of housing that's allowed in some of our areas within the city. So currently, a lot of our residential areas within the single family residential areas within the city do not, they only allow single family residential. They don't allow things like townhomes or triplexes or duplexes. And so this bill really requires that we take a look at our existing zoning and land use and allow those types of housing within the city. So we'll be looking at that in more detail because that just got, actually, I don't even know if the bill got signed. I know it's on the governor's desk. I'm not sure if it's officially signed yet into law.
Okay.
Okay, so a little bit on the overall EIS that falls under the State Environmental Policy Act. So we started kind of the work under the EIS last August. We had a scoping period where we presented kind of these growth concepts to the community and to council and to the Planning Commission and got feedback. Then we refined those growth concepts. We've done a lot of technical work on the four alternatives, which I'll go into more detail about, and then each of the alternatives has a whole lot of environmental analysis. So we're assessing what the transportation impacts are, what the air quality impacts are. So different pieces like that are evaluated for each of the alternatives. We just issued the draft EIS last week, and there'll be a 45-day comment period following that. We have three public meetings where we're going to be talking with the community, two in person and one virtual. So definitely encourage you to attend that if you're interested. And then following that, we'll be really responding to all the public comments we receive in what we call our final EIS. Using that public dialogue and then conversation with the Planning Commission, we'll be really working through and figuring out which alternative. It could be a combination of the alternatives too. So it could be aspects of alternative one and three or two, just, you know, different scenarios. And then finally, a preferred alternative will be selected or recommended by Planning Commission to Council, and then we'll get Council direction on that. And that will be the city's growth strategy for the next or will inform the city's growth strategy over the next 20 years, which will really feed into policy changes and land use map changes too. Okay, so now getting into the nitty-gritty and kind of the specifics on the alternatives. So before we jump into that, I'm not sure if everyone can see that the little legend at the bottom, but I just wanted to highlight a few things because I think the closed captioning is covering a portion of it, but I can just talk through that. So in all of the four alternatives, the orange areas, the orange squares that you see represent our urban core, which in alternative zero, which is what would occur if we were to make absolutely no changes, so we continue with our existing growth strategy. So existing growth is focused in downtown and Belle Red and East Main. In alternatives one, two, and three, we're adding on the Wilburton commercial study area. So that's so the urban core is expanding a little bit. In alternatives one, two, and three, the darker blue squares or shapes that you see, that represents our other mixed-use centers. So those represent Crossroads, Factoria, and Eastgate. So we're looking at different approaches of analyzing adding capacity to those areas as well. And then in alternatives two and three, the white dashed arrows represent areas well served by transit. So not just light rail, but also what we call our frequent transit networks, areas well served by bus, rapid ride, and just good transit connections. And then the red circles represent our neighborhood centers, so areas like Lake Hills Shopping Center, Kelsey Creek, Newport Hills, and then, of course, the yellow, the larger yellow area represents our existing single-family residential areas, which, as the vice chair asked, we'll be looking at how we have to align with the new legislation that got passed. So each alternative, apart from, of course, the no action, builds off of each other, and I'll go over the numbers in the next couple of slides. But this slide really focuses in on where we're adding capacity. So in alternative one, we'd be adding more capacity in our urban core, so that's downtown Belle Red, East Main, and then also the mixed-use centers, Crossroads, Factoria, Eastgate. We're also looking at what we call a gentle density in our single-family residential areas. In alternative two, we're building off of alternative one, so everything that we looked at in alternative one, we're adding on by looking at adding additional capacity in our frequent, in areas well served by transit, and then also adding additional capacity within the neighborhood centers. And then lastly, alternative three, which has the most capacity, building on from alternative two, we're looking at adding additional capacity around the neighborhood centers. So like a quarter mile, half mile radius around the neighborhood centers. And that's where that economic analysis is really vital, like trying to figure out what those market dynamics are going to look like and to support creation of those neighborhood centers or adding capacity there. And then lastly, and I think this is certainly going to be of interest to this commission, looking at different approaches towards affordable housing. So each of the alternatives looks at different approaches. Currently, Bellevue has more of an incentive-based approach to affordable housing. So we don't have what we call what's called mandatory, so required affordable housing when developers come in and request a rezone or add new development within the city. But that's something we're analyzing as part of this effort. So under alternative one, we're looking at both a combination of mandatory affordable housing as well as incentive-based, continuing on with our incentive-based approach. Under alternative two, we're focusing just on incentives. And then under alternative three, we're doing what we call voluntary requirements for affordable housing, similar to what we have actually in Belle Red, and then mandatory, and then also an incentive base. So basically, alternative three has everything, as well as the largest capacity. Let me go to the next slide. So this just provides a little bit in terms of numbers, and the no action, of course, represents what our existing capacity is. So we talked a little bit about that 41,000 housing units and 124,000 jobs. And I did want to mention that in all four alternatives, our growth targets remain the same. So that's not changing. We're just looking at what the environmental impacts at this stage. We're only looking at what the environmental impacts are going to be if we add a certain more amount of additional capacity. So under alternative one, we're looking at adding 59,000 housing units and 179,000 jobs. And then upwards from there, alternative two goes up to 77,000 housing units and 177,000 jobs. So slightly lower on the jobs front. And then alternative three, which of course has the most capacity, 95,000 housing units and 200,000 jobs. And here I did want to just reiterate, it's adding additional capacity. So it's adding on from what we have currently, which is fairly substantive. If you could go to the next slide. Okay, I'm going to pause there.
Yeah, what does it mean by planning for those jobs, like targets? What does that mean exactly?
Are you talking about the difference between the targets and the capacity, or are you just asking?
Are we saying that there's going to be that much job growth? We're planning for more businesses to come in.
Room for more office space, more commercial space. So whatever falls under the jobs category,
okay.
You know, a mix of, you know, different types of offices. Our economic development is doing a lot of work with trying to attract some biotech types of uses and things like that. So anything that really relates to job creation, types of land uses that relate to job creation would fall under that category.
Thank you.
I did want to stop there because that was a lot, and see if you had any questions before we move on. I don't know if it's helpful to go back to the numbers or the maps, because I know there were a couple questions earlier on, or we can wait till the end too. All right, and continue on. So a little bit on the process. As I said, we issued the draft EIS last week. We're going to be doing a fair amount of community engagement, which will really inform the preferred alternative, and then the cities eventually inform the city's growth strategy for the next 20 years. If you go to the next slide. Okay, so a little bit on the framework that we're using for analyzing existing policies, and this applies to all the elements, not just the human services element, but this is kind of the framework that we used. So we're dividing them up into four categories, areas where we need to add new policies, policy support based on, you know, things that have changed either under state law, change conditions within Bellevue specifically, plans that may have been updated. So adding new policy support to really address those pieces. Then we'd also look at our existing policies and then take out policies that are not being used or either redundant or just unclear. And that's also covered in the next category, where if we need to make more changes to clarify things or add consistency across the elements, we would be doing that. And then also really look at, are there policies that would fit better in another section of the comprehensive plan itself. So those are kind of our four areas that we were really focusing in on for policy changes. If you could go to the next slide. So some of the issues that really inform some of the policy changes, there are changes in planning documents. Like, for example, there's changes. I know you do your human services needs update every couple of years, so there are changes from that really need to be, really need more stronger policy support and other work plan pieces that you're working on. That would be something that we could really address through this update. Of course, there's new growth targets, so we have to address that. Requirements for affordable housing coming from the state legislature and Department of Commerce, really looking at how our diversity has changed over the last, you know, Bellevue's become a pretty diverse community, particularly in the last 10 years. So really providing for that, you know, to represent that community group. And then also really looking at some of the impacts of COVID and how we can address that through policy development. So some of the changes that we have identified, and here is where, you know, we'd really like confirmation and feedback from your commission. Equity is a cornerstone of the update, both in terms of council direction as well as direction from Vision 2050 and the countywide planning policies. So our EIS as well has an equity lens to each of the alternatives, is assessed from an equity standpoint. And then, of course, as I mentioned, we're also looking at displacement impact. So we'd want to ensure that all the policies are incorporating equity in some way. And if they don't, then they would need to be updated. We want to add a closer tie. This was something that staff has spent a lot of time talking about, aligning the human services element more closely with the housing element because they really are tied together. And then adding more policy support for homelessness. That's something that the human services, current human services element does not have a whole lot of policy support for. And we've done, there's been a lot of work being done on around the housing stability program. So how can we add more policy support for things like that? Adding policies and support for human services priorities, and then adding more policy support to address the homelessness crisis, as well as adding policy support to address some of our different diverse interests, so like senior housing, things like group homes. So those are kind of our policy, our staff's recommended policy changes, and we worked closely with Tony and her staff to develop those changes. So that, I'm going to pause a little bit and see if they wanted to have any discussion on that before I kind of move on. The next kind of topic is going to be a lot of just a recap on community engagement and what we've done so far. So this is kind of the meat of the purpose of this evening's conversation.
So I'm just going to ask, are these elements things that we're going to talk about and look for ways to incorporate that in the updates, or is this something that's already been done?
It has not been done. So these are the changes that we're thinking that need to be made to the policies within the human services element. I provided a link, and I think as an attachment, all the existing policies. The human services element actually does not have all, you know, as many policies as some of the other elements do, which I think is a good thing. We want
right,
to be
so
clear.
The chapters
provide,
and the
yes.
Okay.
So based on this, these are kind of, this is kind of, think of this as kind of the framework. And then we'll be bringing back specific policy language probably at, in the fall for your review. So, and then you can definitely provide feedback at that point. But this is kind of our scope. So we wanted to present this to you and get confirmation that there are other things you think we should be addressing as part of the update to the human services element. This would be a good opportunity to talk about it and get your feedback.
I would just, oh, Chad, did you have another?
No,
okay. Sorry. Just, I can't see everything behind the dialogue box there, but I assume that the last bullet point is not, oh, thank you. Group homes and supportive housing. I assume that that's not an exhaustive list.
No,
okay.
We would just want to add more support.
Okay, because I mean, I think that this commission, I mean, there are some areas that we focused and where we found a real need. I mean, some that come to mind immediately are affordable childcare. I mean, that's just such a crucial one, particularly when we talk about sort of overall affordability. And I'm sure that the commission could come up with lots of others, but I just want to make sure that we're not.
Yeah, we're not.
Closing. There's a lot that I think we need to address. So thank you.
I think one thing that comes to my mind, usually that gets skipped a lot of times when we think about, you know, the emerging issues is climate change. So, and when we think about human services, there is a direct impact to the livelihoods, especially the poor people.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about weather. So it's getting colder over the years, or like the rainfall, that the amount of rain density is changing. So how does that impact homelessness? How does that impact, even if we provide for housing or whatever, is the utility to the people same as it used to be before? So then how does that impact transportation or like access to transportation. So I think this is what also we should think about, because this is going to be a larger concern in future. So we should start thinking about that starting now.
Absolutely. So I did want to mention the EIS does look at air quality impacts. So as we're looking at where, you know, that map of the looking at capacity in different scenarios, we are looking at what the impacts of air quality are going to be, you know, citing adding additional capacity close to freeways. What are the impacts? So both air quality and greenhouse gas emissions are being evaluated, and then the environmental justice issues definitely comes into play there. So just to clarify, are you recommending that or thinking that it would be advantageous to add policy support?
Or I think as a commission, if we take a stand on supporting policies or organizations that actually adapt to more climate friendly changes, for example, maybe using renewable energy resources, so then we make a statement to people that, you know, we support it, and it's also a way of enabling that behavior in people. And I think this is going to, it might not be one of the topics that's being talked about right now, but I think it's going to be a concern in the future. It's going to be one of the big problems, and it definitely impacts people with low income much higher than people with higher income.
Absolutely.
So since we are concerned about human services and the impact that it causes to people and their livelihoods, I think we should instill in our framework and how we can address, at least predict the future issues, how that would impact the livelihoods of people. Would the funding be enough to address those concerns? Let's say there's, it might sound absurd, but let's say there's a hurricane here, which is unlikely, but it's changing, right? So let's say there's a hurricane here. Are we prepared to handle that kind of an impact? Well, it impacts rich people. Okay, so they can relocate or whatever. But what about the people with low income or people who are homeless? So then we need to start thinking like that as well.
Absolutely. And just to add on, we have a grant from the State Department of Commerce. And it's sort of like a portion of the EIS, but it's coming just timing wise. It's going to be issued probably alongside the final EIS. We're doing a, and I'm just thinking that might be of interest to get a briefing from Jennifer Ewing. She's heading up it's called a climate resiliency plan. So they're evaluating what the climate risks are and assessments. So I can talk with her and see if we want to come back to you at some point in the future. And once they're still developing the plan, so it's not finalized yet, but that might be, I'm thinking that might be of interest to the commission or at least a couple commissioners.
Yeah, I think both that, and we haven't had a presentation on the more recent adopted policies that council has passed, so that might be a good update as well. Commissioner Jane, would I be summarizing correctly if I'm hearing you correctly that you might suggest another bullet that says add policies addressing the impacts of climate change on vulnerable populations?
Yes, exactly. That's
what I'm saying. Yeah.
All right. Well, I can wrap, you know, continue on through the rest of the presentation, and then, you know, happy to answer more questions and have more discussion. Yeah. Go to the next slide. So just wanted to highlight, there's quite a few slides on engagement. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time, but just wanted to give this commission, kind of, since it's been so long, there's a lot to cover. And we've covered a lot of these things with the other commissions. So just to provide a little bit of a recap, we had a formal community engagement plan that was adopted by council when we launched this project. Some of those pieces, most we've implemented as part of the overall process. Some we've fine-tuned and things like that. We had an aspect called comprehensive plan ambassador. So we wanted folks from the community to really get more engaged and start really being spreading the word. We didn't get much involvement, so that was something we didn't do much more of, but we've done a lot more. We really, our focus has been on how do we engage with our underrepresented populations, and that's something that council and the planning commission have given us a lot of feedback on over the last few years too. Go to the next slide. So in total, since we launched with City Council, we've probably communicated with about 5,000 community members. Of course, not each of them is like individual. There would be some overlap with various events and things like that. We had the vision survey. We've had a number of tabling events. We're using our cultural outreach assistants. I'm not sure if this commission's aware of that program, but we have members of the community representing the South Asian community, the Chinese community, and the Latinx community. So we've really been able to engage with those communities, bring them in to our overall engagement process. In addition, we also really wanted to hear from Bellevue residents, especially as it comes to housing, because we know housing is such a top critical issue within the community. As I said, we really depended on the strategy team. They provided us a lot of insight, both with feedback on the vision, developing these growth concepts, and just overall policy development. And we anticipate that we'll be, getting back with them probably in the fall as we start more refining our policy changes. And then the last piece is really taking into account, we've heard a lot about this from our city council, and we hear about this at council meetings as well, people that cannot afford to live in Bellevue but want to live, so how do we get their voice heard too and incorporated into this overall plan, as well as maybe people that that work here but don't necessarily live here. There's a very small percentage of our population but that both live and work in Bellevue. So that's interesting too. We could go to the next slide. So a little bit on the statistically valid survey, which occurred very recently in the last couple months. We're actually doing a lunch and learn on the survey results tomorrow afternoon. So it's a virtual event. So any of you that are interested in some of the survey results, which I'll just highlight a few things for you this evening, but we're going to do a deeper dive on we have a dashboard that's live now of how to navigate that and how to really read some of the data. We had about 1,100 respondents. We also included some follow-up surveys. So we really wanted to make sure statistically valid. So we used methods such as we followed up with folks with phone calls. I don't think we did any in-person surveys, but definitely wanted to ensure that we got a good representation of Bellevue's community. We also had the survey weighted to reflect population based on age, type of housing, so single family versus, townhomes versus, higher density. And then something that was really different from some of the other engagement efforts, we really looked at feedback from folks that own homes versus rent, because a good portion of our population, especially with all the development that we've seen in the last few years, primarily rental. And then, of course, income. So those were the factors that we really weighted the survey on.
I have a question, just being a nerd here.
And I may not know the answer. I'm not a data expert, but.
So just trying to understand, when you do the surveys and you sample the population, how do you make sure that in a particular zip code, let's say in Bellevue, the percentage of people that represent that zip code is homogenous across different zip codes? So why I'm asking that is, a lot of times what happens is a particular community is concentrated in a region, and if you have a larger portion of your sample in that region, they will be represented in the sample. So do you make sure that you collect data unbiased and it's fair across the different zip code areas?
Yes, and the dashboard, really, you can go through and look at results by neighborhood in Bellevue as well. And then you can look at it by, you know, rental versus ownership, things like that.
Okay. So I'm assuming you're saying that it's pretty, this is considered and it's part of the decision-making process for the sampling.
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. Go to the next slide. So just a few highlights from the survey. We got feedback on what Bellevue residents really thought their most important issues are. Home ownership was an important piece because, as I said, a large portion of our population is primarily rental at this point, especially in the last few years. The environment and ensuring that we're preserving our tree canopy and adding to it. Trees are a significant issue and concern in Bellevue. And then just placemaking, so the ability to have services close to where people live and work, that's really important. Something interesting, we also wanted to hear from the community and Bellevue residents about if they would be supportive of new development within the city. And what we found was, from the sample, 67% were really supportive of new development. And then 54% were supportive of new types of housing development as well. To the next slide. So this is a little bit of this is a screenshot from the survey. And I'm not sure I don't think we're going to record tomorrow's presentation, but we could certainly send that out as well for those that aren't able to attend the lunch and learn tomorrow. But that will kind of be a walkthrough on how to really navigate the dashboard. But what we found were, these were the top priorities for Bellevue residents: home ownership, tree canopy. And some of them, as you go through kind of the results, you'll be able to see they're pretty close, even though number four is just, you know, is sequential, three and four pretty close in line. So interesting results. And it varies pretty significantly based on the realm of age. That was one of the most significant differentials that we found. If you could go to the next slide. You may have to move. Yes, if you can move that. Thank you. So this was a really key component. We really wanted to hear from Bellevue residents about the types of housing that they'd like to see in Bellevue, in their neighborhood specifically. And so something that's interesting that came out as a result of the survey is that a large percentage of Bellevue residents really recognize the need for the middle-scale housing. So both low-scale residential as well as mixed use, which are not as dense as what you'd see in downtown and potentially Bellred. So significant two-thirds of Bellevue residents that participated in the survey really are in support of that middle-scale type of housing. Go to the next slide. So these are the three areas we heard a lot about from the community through our various community engagement efforts over the last year. Equity, of course, is something that got very strongly expressed. Housing and providing a range of housing types for the community. Heard a lot from our senior community about ensuring that there's good access for them, especially folks that lived on fixed incomes, good access for transportation as well, and then sustainability and climate change is also a significant issue for Bellevue residents. And then finally, right now, as I said, we're in the draft EIS public comment period. Following that, we'll be coming back to you probably in the fall once we have a preferred alternative defined. and start discussing specific policy changes. We'll be presenting that to you, and so working through some of the policy, proposed policy changes, and then we'll move forward with the Planning Commission process. We intend to have some workshops where we present a public draft of the comprehensive plan in probably the September-October timeframe. So we'll have a series of workshops and really get feedback from them. And then there'll be a public hearing process with the Planning Commission. We anticipate probably early next year, and then following that recommendation and then City Council action in probably April and May of 2024. So with that, I think that concludes the presentation. So happy to answer any questions and get any more feedback from you.
Anyone, any questions?
I would just say great job. Thank you. You weren't even using notes. What's that? Said you weren't even using notes. That was quite impressive. We've had a lot of presentations, so thanks.
Thank you. So new business item two, human services strategic plan. Staff will now provide informational presentation to the Human Service Commission on upcoming process to develop the city's first human service strategic plan.
Great, thank you. So I'm going to be presenting on this evening, and there is a PowerPoint that Asma will be leading us through as well for this. I will be using notes. Okay, so tonight I'll just be giving you an overview of a process that we will be undertaking. Next slide, it is just for your information. Of course, we welcome your feedback and questions, but there's no action necessary this evening. We're just trying to keep you informed and keep you engaged. Next slide, please. So we will go over a couple of things this evening, the background that brought us to this point, the purpose of a strategic plan, what we would focus on, and then how we will go about conducting it. Next slide. So first of all, the background. Some of this might be a refresher for you, but the role of human services in the city of Bellevue is dictated by policy. It was adopted in a resolution. It's also outlined in the comprehensive plan that Tara just spoke about. It identifies the city's role as a whole in human services as a planner, funder, facilitator, and in very select cases as a provider. So the comprehensive plan policy says that we would be a provider of services if there was not another resource in the community. It's not the exact language, but almost of last choice. We would instead empower community providers. Some examples of how the city has gone about approaching making significant decisions that impact our residents is a high priority on considering data. An example of that applies to human services is the human services needs update that we have been doing for many, many years. Those of you that have been a part of the commission for a while know that. Those of you that are newer may have seen an old one, but it is a something we do every 2 years. So it is a lot of engagement with the community. You will be engaged in the process. We do a statistically valid survey as well. And also look at existing data, for example, census results or other surveys that have been taken to pull into that. It produces a data guide on the different types of needs in the community. And so that is something that has informed human services work. Other examples of city policy documents that are data driven that inform human services work are the Diversity Advantage Plan, which was adopted in 2014. That too is being considered for an update. And then the Affordable Housing Strategy that has been adopted by the city has a really clear intersection with our work as well. In a number of other areas in the city, a strategic plan has been adopted to guide the work, and human services up to this point has not adopted a strategic plan. So we'll talk a little bit more about that. Next slide, please. So why would we go about having a strategic plan? We would make sure that anything that we are doing remains in alignment with the council vision for achieving human potential. That is part of the
council adopted vision, also in alignment with, of course, the comprehensive plan. So it will continue to kind of be our North Star in that way. In addition, while we identify the needs, the plan would take us a step further to identify strategies, goals, and actions to make sure we're achieving the best value for our investment. As you all have seen, the demand has only increased. And so giving us a framework, it would not be something that would dictate action. It would be a framework of questions that could be asked and strategies that could be used to help determine how best to invest dollars. It would also help us address a question that's been raised by council quite a bit about how do we measure outcomes of our investment, which is really tricky in human services. I think we all know that here. We definitely measure outputs. Those are the service units that you all analyze. We ask agencies to report outcomes. It is a big question that's raised anywhere that investments are made in human services is how do you know how effective they are? And so we receive reports from agencies. We will be exploring, are there other best practices that we could be engaging in while trying to balance the needs of our agencies that we already ask a lot in their reporting? And so are there ways we could gather more info? And if so, what would be the most effective way to do that? And then also an opportunity for the examiner to examine and adjust current processes, everything from the formula for the Human Services Fund to the way we receive applications to how we're supporting you. We've made some small changes most recently in working with the framework. Are there better ways that we could be going about that that would make us most effective? Slide, please. So the areas that we will focus on, one of them we touched on a bit was the increased demand for funding from an increased number of entities. And so the question really being, what do we do with that fact? An example of a question that could be asked, and we'll see what, you know, outreach input from you and the community would say is, should we be narrowing our focus to investment in a number of critical areas every year versus every year spreading it across the entire continuum? Would that make a more powerful impact? That's a question. We don't know the answer, and we'll value your input on questions like that. But as we continue to see this demand at this really high level, and the city is incredibly generous, but of course has limited capacity, how do we make decisions about how to invest that the best way? We'll also be asking the identified responsibilities for human services. Are we being the most effective in each of those, in planning, in being a funder, in being a facilitator? Are there things that we could be doing better as a staff, as a commission to support the community in those areas? I just talked a bit about measuring impact and progress, and so looking at best practices, hearing from other funders and leaders in human services about how we could be doing that. We'll be raising the question about the amount of general funds invested in human services. That would only be data gathering. That's a council decision. So we would perhaps put that in front of them for their consideration, looking at are there alternative types of formulas. We invest significantly more in human services than the other suburban cities, but just having that data available so we can continue to consider that. In addition, making sure that we are engaging in the practices you all have continued to explore, which, by the way, the council really noted appreciation for last night in furthering equity. They recognize that in your process. So learning from existing best practices, learning from others, are there additional steps that we could be taken to further equity in our funding process?
Do we answer these now, or?
These are just the areas that we're going to be exploring through the strategic planning process, but I most definitely will take your input if you have some thoughts you'd like me to hear right now.
It comes to my mind when we were doing the funding allocation.
Uh-huh.
How do we go about measuring the accuracy of impact that these organizations tell us that they will have, and then we approve the funding? What is the auditing process?
Yeah.
Like, do we, so whenever I'm making a decision, it should make me feel comfortable that the organizations that we're funding, they're actually doing what they say, because mm-hmm. there's just numbers on paper.
Absolutely.
So do we have a robust process to make sure that these organizations are accountable for what they say that they're doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great question. Thank you. So once you all make recommendations for funding, a number of steps take place, and our team is deep in these steps right now. One, you know, if I as an agency requested $10,000 for a certain number of service units and the commission made a recommendation for $5,000, then we need to go back to them and adjust their service units. So they said they would provide a certain level of service at 10,000 and we only provide 5, we go back and work with them on that. And that's called a scope of work. And so that is what they are committing to us to provide based on the amount of dollars that's awarded. So that's step one. And then contracts are awarded that outline that very specific thing. Agencies are required to report to us quarterly on the service units that they have provided. We require pretty detailed backup for how they use the dollars. And so if they've said, I will be providing therapy, so this will provide for staffing, then they need to document how they have paid for staffing with our dollars. And so our funding is reimbursement based. So agencies provide the services and then they seek reimbursement for us from us for the services. So they cannot get the dollars until they can document that they've provided the services. So that happens every quarter. And then there is also an end of the year report that not just includes service units, but it's also that demographic report that we often see a breakout of, you know, where were the people from, what were their races and ethnicities. So that's the process for the agencies. Work for the staff, in addition during that time, is every quarter, it's desk monitoring is what it's called, the review of all those materials. Did anything raise questions that we feel like we just aren't getting clarity on what is happening? In addition, we do in-person monitoring. Pandemic clearly shut down in-person monitoring for a while. And so this year, this amazing staff is going to monitor every single contracted agency in person and go and make sure we're laying eyes on what they're doing. We're seeing where they're offering their services, looking at case files in person to make sure appropriate documentation is being kept, to make sure it lines up with what they're invoicing us for. So that will happen with every single agency that we contract this year. I think typically it's more that we've done it once every 2 years for an agency, but it kind of do a catch-up sweep. We'll do them all this year. Yeah.
Tony, thanks so much for that. That's something that you said just really resonates with me. And it's something actually I was thinking about as I was stuck in traffic, was kind of in the upcoming funding cycle. You know, you mentioned outputs versus outcomes,
right,
which I think is so important in terms of the way we think about this. You know, particularly, I guess what I would want, I think there's an opportunity for us to perhaps have a little bit more scrutiny beyond the agency level in this next round and look really at a more macro level. It's like, okay, this will be my fourth funding cycle. And to say, okay, how much have we really moved? That would be what, 8 years, whatever. How much have we really moved the needle after allocating X million dollars? I mean, sure we can. And I'm not trying to dismiss any of the agencies, but I'm just saying when you finally come back and do that reconciliation, it's like, okay, well, we allocated X million dollars. What did we really get for it?
Yes.
And I know it might seem overly simplistic, but I just kind of had one of those moments where it's like, maybe we need to shift the focus a little bit in the next.
So thank you. A couple of thoughts there. So agencies are beyond their outputs, their service units, which they are required to report to us, they also do report outcomes at an agency level. So, you know, a difference, I'm making this up, but a difference might be that a shelter says I'll provide 100 bed nights and the outcome is this many individuals transition to permanent housing. So you see the impact at that level. It is, you're raising the question that council frequently raises that is so incredibly tricky, as I know you can understand, for human services, is those individuals moving into permanent housing doesn't necessarily mean that at a community level we see a reduction in homelessness. So that's what's difficult, right? So we can see it at an agency level and how effective are you being in producing outcomes. When we try to raise up to a community level, there are so many intersecting factors that lead to the need for human services that it's hard to tie that back to, did this agency make an impact? So you know, looking at that agency, the more direct causation versus just correlation is looking at their outcome versus an entire city outcome. But it's hard. It's questions that we hear a lot. You know, another example I think would be behavioral health. I'll provide this many counseling sessions. An outcome might be that we see this level of reduction in anxiety or suicidality in a youth. But are we seeing a community-wide reduction in the need for behavioral health services for youth? No. But that's still valuable that that agency had that measurable outcome. Yeah.
Yeah. So going back to the macro level measurement, so when we are planning for the goals to achieve a certain level of reduction in homelessness or whatever, is there a tangible number that we plan for that we want to reduce it by X percentage? Or we just say, okay, we want to reduce it, but then I don't see any numbers like that. So then we can do an actual measurable impact analysis at some point and be like, okay, this is what we planned for. This is how much we allocated, and this is what the actual impact is. So then there's like a gap that we can fill and we can plan for future.
Mm-hmm.
So do we do that kind of planning?
No, and because. So let's use homelessness as an example. And you two can chime in. I know I talk really fast, so just like cut me right off and jump in. The funding that we provide right now to homelessness service providers, it already does not meet the demand. And so even if we identified how many people do we want to serve, how many people do we want to offer shelter to, there is simply not even enough providers on the east side to serve everyone that would want to access it. So that is one area that would make that challenging. The other area that would make that challenging is accessing that service doesn't necessarily mean that the community demand for that always goes down. And so if we focus on moving people out of homelessness, we could focus on that, but we wouldn't necessarily be able to tie that to, but did the demand go down in the community? Because it too many factors contribute to the need for human services. So an agency might be very effective. Our investments might be very effective. But if we're in the midst of a recession, not saying that we are, if we're in the midst of a recession, if the cost of food skyrockets, if there's all these other factors that lead to homelessness, we might not meet our target. And that isn't necessarily tied to our investment level. Mm-hmm. But to your point, a question might be, when we, you know, receive really fantastic applications from 100 agencies or 100 programs, and you all are highly responsive to that and wanting to be responsive to as many providers as possible, which means everybody gets a portion of their request, right? And sometimes a small portion of their request. Does that allow agencies to be effective? Does that allow impact to be made as significantly in those service areas versus a possible alternative? I'm sure there are others, would be to say, let's look at the data. What are our 5 most significant areas of need? And it hurts, but we're not going to be able to fund everything this year. We're going to invest really heavily in these areas and direct our dollars in a concentrated way so we can more effectively say, are we making an impact? So to your point, there might be a way to shift our thinking. It just doesn't always look like an inputs, outputs, outcomes model as clearly in human services.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point. But I think what's missing is a clear goal, like a tangible goal.
Mm-hmm.
So I think even with all the challenges, there has to be a tangible goal that we are trying to achieve, given the understanding that the actual number of homeless people would go up next year. So we'd have a projection of that, mm-hmm. how much it will go up. Given this understanding, with the funding that we have, how much reduction can we expect? If the number of homelessness is stagnant today,
mm-hmm.
we lock it today.
Mm-hmm.
From that point, what is the number that we are trying to achieve? Why I'm saying that it's important is
because then we will have a very clear understanding of the gap in our funding and how much we should actually target to have a tangible impact on our community. Because, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So having a goal would clearly help us analyze if we are in the right direction or not and how much we need to go further down.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to think about how much more we want to have funding for the commission, I think this would help there.
Yeah. And that would be really excellent feedback when we're, and I'm gathering your feedback now. But again, when we are more formally gathering your feedback for both the plan and the needs update and the strategic plan, because that's what we're looking for, is what are some alternative ways that we could go about this? And so maybe it is what you're suggesting, like you identify target areas and you set a goal, a driving statement that says, now how do we go about this? So I definitely think that would be something to be considered. An added element of the challenge for human services is ultimate, you know, a lot like what is being discussed with the comprehensive plan. We can invest more and more dollars in affordable housing, but unless there's potentially shifts in policies, your ability to expand affordable housing is capped at a certain level. And you have to decide, is that the level we want it to be at? So the dollars can make some level of change. If you choose that you want more level of change, well, that requires policy changes. If we go back to behavioral health, we can keep pouring money into behavioral health for youth over and over and over. Our community as a whole is going to have to explore what is leading to the crisis in youth that need behavioral health. And us putting money into the services is huge and necessary, but ultimately change will not happen unless the contributing factors get addressed as well.
Perfect.
Yeah. Really great questions. Man, it'll be a great dialogue. Okay, next slide. So this is the process that we will be going through. So we already issued an RFP. We already had a staff review team and are close to locking that down. So the difference this year is we'll be using a vendor to both work on the needs assessment update and strategic plan, because we view them as one cohesive unit and don't think it would be very practical to do one separate from the other, because as we're getting feedback on the needs, we want to get exactly the feedback like what you're sharing. Well, here's my need, but also here's how we could go about addressing that need in a better way. So immediate next step, once we get that contract solidified, we'll begin community outreach and data gathering. Those of you that have been on the commission for a while have experienced us doing this before, which means we do issue a survey. We do go out and do focus groups. We interview subject matter experts. Your input will be sought as well. And then a draft of the needs update report, which again is that data report, will come back to you. That will also go to the council to get their feedback before it's finalized. And then at kind of simultaneously, the feedback will also then be getting synthesized into strategic planning document, which will subsequently also be brought back to you for input on the draft, and then ultimately go to council as well. That is it, but I welcome your questions, thoughts, and input. Again, if you have an opportunity to listen to the council meeting last night and our presentation, council had a lot of input on this topic and questions and thoughts and suggestions. You all hearing it might help you be able to come back and say, which of these do we feel like we can tackle right now? Our council has great ambition for addressing human services in the city. We might have to decide if this is a multi-stage process, given the level of questions they were raising, which were all really important questions. Maybe there's a kind of a round one that produces a report that impacts our funding next year. And then maybe there's an additional process that begins to go into some additional questions. And that might be a thought process that we go through with you all as well. Like, what are the questions that we need to address right now? And what do we need to dig a little deeper, perhaps, and address longer term?
We have one question on the last slide. I just mentioned the strategic planning sessions. Who's involved in those? And kind of what kind of format?
I think it will depend on if we get enough input during the outreach that we feel like that's more of like draft writing sessions, or if it's we got enough for the needs update, but we didn't quite get enough for the strategic planning. So I think that will be developed based on how much input we get during the first outreach phase. Yeah. Okay, thank you all. Great conversations this evening.
Thank you. New business item 3, commissioner request to participate in future meeting remotely. Who will need to participate remotely at the May 16th and June 6th meeting? Any request for a meeting happening later in the year?
You said the dates again. I'm sorry. It was May
16th and June 6th. No, you could? Okay. Any oral communications?
I apologize. I did have one more reminder for the commission. Please update your iPads.
Yep.
Yes, I did.
It was already.
Okay. Thank you.
Is there anyone on the Zoom who would like to speak?
No, there's no one.
No.
No one in person. So meeting is adjourned at 6:40?
7:40.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.